Hey everybody, J.J. Cooper, Ian Kundle, Baseball America Prospect Podcast, and I'm going to start with an apology. I'm not on my normal camera, I'm not in my normal studio, I'm in Philly for the All-Star Game, and I can't find my headphones, I don't have a good microphone. I'm going to clean it up as much as I can. I apologize though if the audio is a little bit worse than normal. I really am sorry about that. But we still wanted to come to you and talk to you because we were at the Futures Game yesterday, while trying to also cover the draft, which was a little bit too much of a good thing, But we wanted to share our thoughts about that. We're moving it up a little bit to this week because we thought, you know, we'd do that fresh before the All-Star Game. Ian, the first thing I want to ask you is it your first in-person Futures Game, right?
Correct.
What was that like?
It was fun. I mean, it was definitely different. I wasn't sure what to expect, obviously. I've watched it on TV every year, but I think being there just felt different. It felt a lot bigger in person than I feel like it does on TV. You know, there's a lot of media there. Stands aren't packed, but it's, you know, it's not very often that you get to see that many talented players on the field at once. And I think that was something that I really, you know, you're prepared for, but I don't think you really understand it until you start watching the game in person, because obviously we go to tons of minor league games per year. We're never seeing anything close to that much talent on one field. You know, and I think it really showed, then the area that really showed it to most of me was just kind of how the game felt pacing. It felt like if I looked away for a second, I was missing something. Whereas, you know, when you go to a minor league game during the regular season, there's parts of the lineup where, you know, you can, you know, catch up on some notes from earlier from the guys that you're targeting, or, you know, you can, if you're talking to a scout, you can, you know, those are the times in the lineup where you talk to a scout. There was none of that. This was, you miss one pitch and you're scrambling to find out, you know, which guy just threw a 99 mile an hour fastball, or which guy just threw a hammer breaking ball that got a whiff. Like, it was just a lot. And I, as you said, I don't think the draft being on at the same time helped. That was, I think there's definitely some ways that MLB could structure this better. I obviously recognize that it's a little tough because the later you make it in the day, the less time the players have on their break, which maybe that the solution is just extend the minor league break for the full week instead of playing an abbreviated 3-game series. But I think that, you know, it was a very cool experience. Batting practice was very interesting. You know, get to be down on the field, you know, you're right in the action, you're right close to the players. And I think that was one thing that was extremely helpful, was getting to really see like how physical some of these guys are, or on the flip side, how slight some other ones are. That's something, you know, when you watch on Synergy, or you're watching at games, you know, you can see it with guys who obviously you see frequently, but this is a time where you've got players coming from all over the country. You got guys coming from the Northwest League. You got guys coming from the Cal League. You got guys coming from down in Texas. Like, we're getting access and getting to see a lot of the players that we don't see during the regular season. So I think for that aspect, it was very cool. And yeah, I think, you know, it's different. It just felt very different, but I think in a good way.
So this is, I think, my 15th Futures game. And the thing that jumped out about this one that I will say kind of tying in with yours is a 12 o'clock start. It's too early. Too early for the players. I will say, like, for the fans, like, if you're on the West Coast, Futures game's a big deal. You better be ready. Like, setting, okay, it's a 9 a.m. start. That's asking a lot. But more than that, let me just lay this out. You had players who flew in on Saturday from the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Who then showed up at 8 a.m. to take the field by 9:15 to be at batting practice at 9:30 Eastern, which is 6:30 Pacific. I can promise you they're never taking BP at 6:30 in the morning during a normal schedule. Like, yes, I know that there are day games. I know that there are the education days on Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 11 sometimes.
Yeah, but they don't, you know,
they don't do on those days. Yeah. They don't take BP.
Yeah.
And that's a show and go.
And I think the easy solution to me, and I recognize that I was kind of talking a little bit earlier, is just there's no sign in at MLB game. Make the Futures game the Sunday night MLB game on the Sunday before the All-Star break. It would be a standalone slot. It would not be going up against the draft if they want to continue putting the draft the same weekend. And you would not really have any of those issues that you had with the players, you know, coming from the West Coast and then going in and being like, I don't really feel like swinging a bat at 9:30 in the morning, so I'm just going to go up there and throw my hands at a ball.
We saw you, Jose DePaula.
I mean, which I'm not even blaming him for it. I don't blame him at all. But it's one of those things that I think there's an easy solution. And the counter is, I understand, like, because talking to the players after the game, a lot of them, they just want to get home to their families as soon as the game was done. Like, there were some guys out of there ASAP, which completely understand.
It happens in the All-Star game, the actual All-Star game too. We saw that last year where it's like, why are these the guys in the Home Run Derby? Because they're still there.
Yeah.
The guys who played in the first to fifth, they're gone.
Yeah. Just extend the break 3 days. Like, all these guys are going to go back and play a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, wherever their affiliates are. That's not needed. Just get rid of that series or add it at the end of the season. And then you can, they will still, like, I feel like you would have more buy-in too. Cause it would be like, okay, you know, this is the day I would be playing anyway. And then I can leave Monday, like all of my teammates are, instead of what you have now, where it's a lot of the teammates, you know, the teammates are going to be home by Sunday night. Whereas if you play the night game, that's kind of like you're missing a full day basically. Well, that wouldn't be the case if you just extend it, or wouldn't be as big of a deal, I think, if you extend the break.
But we're going to get into the players who stood out and all that. We'll do that right after this quick break.
Many people have this problem. I want to eat healthy. I have the willpower. I don't have the time and the organization. I need help. What do you do?
I mean, you go to Factor. I got two boys that are looking for the gains, and they always come in the house looking for food. Now they have actual healthy food that is great for them. And you know what? It's ready in the fridge for them to pop in and make it right away.
And they have meals built around your goals. It could be weight loss, overall nutrition, gains, more protein, fresh, never frozen, over 100 rotating weekly meals, including globally inspired flavors like Mediterranean and Asian. I get all kinds of different salads from Factor that I love. Quick, easy. They can be ready in 2 minutes. Head to factormeals.com/foul50off and use code FOUL50OFF to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with new subscription only while supplies last until 9/27/2026.
So, Ian, let's start with the pitchers. Mm-hmm. Like, this is really, to be honest, a pitcher-dominated event, as you would expect.
Yeah.
Because the pitchers go out there and they get to just blow gas for really 20 pitches, in some cases four, in I think one case two.
Yep.
You know, but which is not ideal. It's also seven inning game. But okay, Who stood out to you pitcher wise? Who are the pitchers? Who was the first pitcher? Pitcher stood out the most to you?
I mean, I think the clear winner on the pitching side was Seth Hernandez. And I think that he's someone who, JJ, you talked about it on a tweet that I think no one actually got to see, but that
I got banned on Twitter or rate limited multiple times for tweeting too much.
Well, there was too much baseball going on. Blame MLB's calendar. But Seth Hernandez had kind of had some velo fluctuations the last couple of weeks, which is understandable. And it's actually something I talked to him about, was that pro season's hard. Like, for someone like him who is used to throwing for 3 months, basically, you know, he's surpassed how long a high school season is already. And so it was good to see him go out there and just look like the Seth Hernandez we saw in the breakout game in the spring when he was fresh coming off a whole offseason. He sat 99 to 101 miles an hour, had a strikeout on 99 mile an hour two-seamer to Ike Irish. That was just, there was nothing Ike Irish could do with that pitch. It started on the outer half or on the outside corner and ended up 6 inches off the plate at 99 miles an hour. And he had that. And he also had, it was one of the best changeups I think I've seen him throw. He turned it over to Blake Mitchell at 87 miles an hour. Pitch just started, looked like a strike, looked like a normal fastball right there. And then all of a sudden it just wasn't there. And you could tell Mitchell walking back to the dugout was like, what do you want me to do with that? Like, there's nothing, there's nothing you can. And it was a vintage performance, which was nice to see, because since his bump up to high A, you know, there's been some struggles. There's been some inconsistent outings, but this was kind of the Seth Hernandez that we know we've seen him do at the beginning of the season, and why he's one of the top 10 prospects in all of baseball. Because when you're a guy who can go out there and probably has multiple 70s and probably a couple 60s as well, with really good athlete, you know, 6'4" frame. I mean, the sky's the limit with his ceiling. Like, this is, it's completely clear why he's a top 10 pitching prospect. And yeah, this is, he checks all the boxes, and you saw it in this outing, what kind of like his stuff can look like in a short burst. And then, you know, the key is, can he hold it for an entire season? And that's the big question. And it's something that I'm really looking forward to seeing in the second half.
I would say also the other one, which is again, not a surprise. These are two top 10 prospects in the game by our rankings, which I'll tell you again, check out baseballamerica.com, updated every month. But Brian Sloan was filthy.
Yeah.
The Mariners right-hander.
Yeah. Sloan, another guy who joined the triple digits club. He hit 100 miles an hour with his fastball. He mixed it a cutter in like that was like 93 to 95.
Which is what a fastball was not that long ago. Let's just be clear.
Yeah. A splitter and a sweeper. You know, the fastball got a whiff on the fastball, got a whiff on the splitter. And you want to talk about someone who looks like a workhorse starter? He's way more physical than I imagine. Like seeing him kind of in person, and this is, I think, what I was talking about earlier, something that's really beneficial with this, I think, with the pitchers especially, is you can see the guys that are, you know, maybe not as built as physically built strong right now. And Sloan is the opposite. Sloan has tree trunk legs. He's jacked. Like this is what a starting pitcher looks like, especially, which is crazy given what he's 20 years old, I think.
Right. Him and Seth Fernandez both have pro bodies right now. Yes. They'll grow into it.
Yes. And it's present stuff. It's present feel. He only threw an inning, of course, like everyone. Well, not everyone, but at least most you're going to get in this is an inning. And I think that it's going to be a fascinating watching him and Seth go back and forth probably this year and maybe next year, though Sloan's probably up in the majors at some point next year. Maybe he's up this year. Who knows? But I think that he was really impressive. And what's hard about this is that there were so many impressive pitching performances. Like his teammate Cade Anderson, I thought was really impressive. And it was fun to see someone do it a different way, because Cade was hitting 93 to 95. Like he's not going to be hitting triple digits like Hernandez and Sloan are, but he was able to navigate a really difficult top of the order. Miguel Cime Jr., another one, hit but, he had the fastest pitch, 101 miles an hour. And for him, this is a guy who started the season in low A. You know, he's 19 years old, pretty big stage, I would say, for him. And I thought, even though the line wasn't good, I thought he showed some flashes of some stuff, especially the changeup, which is something we talked about in my article today. He's only thrown about 35, 38 changeups this season. And he had the confidence to bring it out against Walker Jenkins and Theo Gillen, two of the best outfield prospects in all of baseball. Like that really stood out to me. And I understand if you ask him, I'm sure he'd be very frustrated with how his performance went. He had some control issues, gave up a couple hits, gave up a run. But to bring out a pitch that you're using like 5% of the time in a showcase game like this with two strikes to two of the best left-handed hitters in the game, or left-handed hitting prospects in the game, that's really impressive stuff. And it gives me some confidence with Cime that, you know, he's more than just a fastball slider pitcher, which I think was kind of the risk was, hey, the command, we'll see where it goes. But he also, you know, he's got to add more pitches to his arsenal. It seems like he's starting, you know, what the Nationals are doing with him is really impressive. I can keep going if you'd like.
I was going to go one the other way, which is, I know it wasn't the best outfield outing by Cash Mayfield. Mm-hmm. Cade Anderson kind of pulled this off, but I would say, I don't think that this environment is as good for that type of really good pitcher as the Ryan Sloan who throws 100 miles an hour, right? Like you've got Cash Mayfield. You don't get to set up, you don't get to basically carve a journey through the hitters. You are going out there. It's like, here's my stuff. And now you're done. Yeah. And I don't think that that's as like, if you throw 100, I think that's better suited for you a lot of times than if you say he's really good at mixing pitches, but it's not 100 mile an hour stuff.
I agree with that. I think that, you know, you saw with some of the other guys like Nolan Perry ran into a little trouble. He was another one who was more like 93 to 95. Anthony Einson, who ended up getting the win, but he had a walk. Like I think what it showed, and I think this is something that you know, talk to some of the pitchers, is something they can take away, is like, you know, your stuff and kind of with minor league lineups, again, there are a couple guys in each lineup that it's, you don't really need your best stuff to get out. When you the more you move up the ladder, the better the hitters get, obviously. But to get out these top prospect hitters, some of whom are, you know, teenagers, some of whom are still in the low minors, these guys are going to have to be on their A game at every point. You know, the pitches that you're used to executing right now in the minors, even in someone like Anthony Ianson, you know, his slider, which is a high whiff pitch from his time in high A and double A, against these guys, they're just going to spin on it. And I think it was a good, you know, litmus test for those guys, as you said, the guys who maybe don't throw as hard, who can't rely on their overpowering fastballs to get guys out, that there are definitely still things we got to work on here. You know, there's refinement with our secondaries, and you just have to be able to execute, you know, command, execution. The higher you go up in the ladder, the more it gets magnified. And I think a showcase environment like this was a good situation, was a good learning lesson for a lot of these pitchers, because they saw that, hey, if you miss your spot by even a few inches, they're going to punish you. JoJo Parker off Miguel Cime. Miguel Cime, this was 101 mile an hour fastball. He was trying to locate it in on his hands. It caught just enough of the plate that JoJo Parker could pull it off the wall for a double.
I just want to bring up that him and Alfredo Duno. One thing also we got, because it was in a big league park, we got bat speeds. Mm-hmm. And those two prospects, the Reds catcher, Alfredo Duno, Blue Jays shortstop slash, I think down the road, probably more like third baseman, JoJo Parker, both had the best bat speed at the game as measured. Yep.
Yeah. And I would say that the surprise of that in that group, Roldy Brito, like, I did not expect that. Charlie Condon was, because, and again, we have all this discussion of the bat speed is in my article today. Which JJ helped, was very helpful on. He wrote some very key parts about batting practice, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit. But Roldy Brito being up there was impressive, because this is a guy who's 19. He's smaller. I mean, you look at Parker is very physically developed for his age. Duno's a monster. He's, you know, what, 6'3", 230, 40 pounds. And Charlie Condon's like 6'6", 220. Brito doesn't really fit in that group. So to see him as one of the highest bat speed guy, I mean, it just showed how tooled up he is. Like, the swing is quick. He was the fastest runner in the game. He's extremely tooled up. But yeah, I think that the pitching, you know, across the board, it was, there were a few, you know, few guys didn't execute and they paid for it. But for the most part, I think, especially with the American League pitching was in control throughout. They don't think they only gave up 4 hits, 3 walks, but they also only did strike out 3, which I think is interesting, because you compare, like, the National League team had 9 strikeouts. And I think it was just, you know, you look at the American League pitchers, other than Ryan Sloan and Kendry Churio, it's a lot of guys sitting in the mid 90s rather than more of the high 90s stuff you saw from the National League team.
But okay, so we've talked about the pitchers. We obviously got to get the hitters too, and we'll do that right after another break. So, Ian, I would say with the hitters, the downside of the futures game, especially now that it's a truncated 7-inning futures game, is when you say the hitters who stood out, you really, like, I think that BP is very important to this, because in game, you may see nothing. You know, we had batters who were hit. It's like, well, what happened? What did he do? He got hit by a pitch. What happens next at bat? He didn't have another at bat. Okay. What do you got? You know, but you throw in BP and you do get really good, I would say, in a lot of cases, good feels. So when I say the hitters who stood out, we can obviously talk about JoJo Parker. We can also talk about Nathan Flewelling. Nathan Flewelling had the probably the biggest hit in the game with a 2-run home run. Don't think it was even his best swing necessarily, but I would say that we saw a hint of that before, because he was one of the guys who in BP really stood out, where we were saying, that's really easy power. It didn't look like he was having to really, you know, you can see guys who are absolutely impressive, but they are impressive. Josiah Hartshorn was extremely impressive. He does it in a, he's very rotational, and when he fires, it explodes. Mm-hmm. There were other guys out there I felt like who was like, bop.
Yep.
Bop. And it was going over the fence. Who stood out to you?
Yeah, I think that Flewelling is obviously is one of them. And we did JJ did a great job. He put together a graphic which shows where every home run from batting practice landed. So, and we cross-checked it. We put a lot of work on this. So if you're interested in seeing
kind of, I'll pop it up here. It'll be on the video when we're on the YouTube feed too.
But yeah, I think, you know, you can really get a feel for guys' power in batting practice. And I will say, and JJ, you've been to a lot more of these than me. I thought the batting practice pitchers were not the best. I've seen better BPs thrown. I don't know how you felt about that.
I would agree.
Because
I would say that there was variance between the groups, because you had different BP pitchers and some of them were a little better than others.
Yes, yes. The American League one who had, what was it, the Jenkins, Flewelling, Velasquez group, that guy was cooking, because that was, you know, that was where we saw, and Blake Mitchell I think was in that group too. But I think that it was also cool to see, though, for the guys, some of the guys who stood out in batting practice that carried over to the game. And you said Nathan Flewelling, obviously he's the MVP of the game. He had the biggest swing, and I think the thing that really stood out to me is you know, it's easy to forget how young he is. Like, he's already in high A and he's probably gonna end the season in double A as a 19-year-old, playing the entire season as 19,
like as a catcher.
And there's been no let up this season. You know, he even if he has a, you know, a bad week, he's bounced back immediately. And this game, batting practice, he finished second, tied for second on the American League in home runs with 6. And as you said, it was easy power. I believe he had 1 upper deck shot. Like, this is a catcher who can really hit. And I thought the thing that was really impressive with me was after, and in the post game press conference that he did, he talked about how he had a very good plan. Like, he really thought about his at bat. He's like, I've never seen the guy before, but Walker Jenkins was the hitter before. The hitter, Pan from the Phillies, walked Walker Jenkins. So what did Flewelling? He went up there looking for a pitch, and he got that exact pitch that he was looking for, and he put a great swing on it. And it's that kind of aptitude, which was really impressive to see, especially for someone who's 19, that he's thinking, hey, you know, this guy just did this. What is he going to do to me without having time, you know, because in the regular season, you're looking at the iPads, you're looking at, you know what to expect from these guys. In this one, for the most part, they're going up blind. I talked to one of the hitters who said that they would talk to like their teammates and see if anyone's faced him during the year. And that was kind of like the info they were getting was directly from that. Flewelling went up there with a plan. He got the pitch and you saw it. It was a very free and easy swing. You know, this was not him having to over rotate or really selling out for power. This was him trusting his hands, trusting his swing and trusting his process. And the result was, you know, the biggest swing of the game. And so I thought he was really impressive. JoJo Parker, as you said, another one, the bat speed he gets from someone his young is very, very impressive. He's got legit power. I think he had three or four home runs in batting practice. And the fact that he was able to get to 101 and access it like that was really impressive. And it was talking to him after the game too. He talked about how he was late on the first fastball he saw from C-May, but it helped him time him up. So then he spits on a changeup, gets another heater, and he's like, I'm not going to be late on this one. And he caught it out front of the plate and he was able to pull it. And to see those kind of in at bat adjustments is really encouraging for someone his age. And I think that what we've seen from him, I think in the first half, is like he's really grown into becoming a professional. You know, I think at the start of the season, kind of had a slower start, you know, the numbers weren't there, but as he's gotten more comfortable, I think the performance is starting to show. And I think he's someone who I think could really take off in the second half.
I would throw in that Hartshorn, I feel like, is a guy who, Okay, for one, you see the present physicality again for a guy who's quite young, you know, was a high school draftee from Orange Lutheran, not that long ago at all. What I would say with him though, is that you saw also like it was, he didn't do it as easy because, again, it's explosive is what I would describe his swing as, which it's not bad versus gliding, but it's more like, again, his is that he explodes into the pitch. But the other part I would say about it is that when he connected, it was some of the most impressive home runs we saw in BP.
Yeah, I would say him, Charlie Condon, probably the longest. Maybe Blake Mitchell too.
Blake Mitchell had an upper decker. I think this may have been the furthest upper decker potentially. Obviously upper deckers, I'll say if you're a left-handed hitter, you had upper decker as an option. If you're a right-handed hitter, it was, you were trying to get to the concourse and no one hitting to left field, I'd say had a ball hit as far as some of those upper decker shots we had.
I mean, yeah, Condon had the furthest right-handed home run.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you. I thought Hartshorn, he also had one of the loudest outs in the game. He had like, I think it was a 104.2 or something around that line drive fly out. Speaking of Hartshorn.
Speaking of that, Caleb Bonnemer had the most surprising stat, I think, of the day. I'll kick it back to you.
Yeah, Caleb Bonnemer. So when you look at him, it's, you know, kind of a boxy frame, very strong, very physical. Yeah, he's stocky. He put up a plus run time on his ground out. Which I, by the way, love to see someone hustling like that in a showcase game because there were definitely others who did not. But plus run time.
And Ian timed it.
Yeah.
Ian timed it. Like, I know StatCast had it, but we also, Ian timed it three times to make sure. And we got a legit 4-2.
Yeah.
From the right hand box. I mean, no question.
That's like for him, someone like him, who I think the athleticism is a question, that was really encouraging to see. You know, he was another one who had some really good swings during batting practice. His power is very real. We'll see where the hit tool goes, but that was impressive. Another one that I think was worth mentioning was Ethan Salas. He had the hardest actual hit of the game. I believe Jesus Mate had the highest EV, but his was on a ground out. But Ethan Salas had 104.4 mile an hour single to left field to left center field. And I think what really stood out to me was just how professional his approach was. Like, he walked in his other at bat, handled pitchers well. And I think with Salas, you know, it's cool to see him healthy, cool to see him out there performing, because obviously this is such a talented player who has had a lot of injuries in his career. And to see him out there and just how easy he makes the game look is a good reminder of why Padres fans can be so excited about someone like him. You know, this is just a really polished player who has immense talent. And it was nice to see him be able to show it on display in this game. Another guy I wanted to mention, he didn't have any hits in this game, was Walker Jenkins, though. He went 0-2.
If you didn't, I was going to.
Yeah, he went 0-2 with two walks, but I thought the quality of his bats were excellent. You know, and I think this is something that he's really having to work on, is kind of trading off that, hey, it's okay to swing and miss because trust your approach. You'll be fine if you fall behind. But at the same time, you know, you want to get to more power. And in batting practice, we saw his power. Like, he didn't, I don't know, I think he only had one upper deck home run, but he was the one who was hitting them to right center, like the deepest part of that ballpark.
He was hitting them to, I mean, some I would almost call center field.
So, yeah. And like, that was very impressive. And again, he's another one. It's free and easy. He looks the part, you know, 6'3".
Oh, he's massively physical.
Yeah. Like, the tools are all there with him. It's just a health thing. If he can stay healthy, I wouldn't be surprised if he's up in the majors this year. And I think this guy, like, ceiling wise, he's, I know we've dropped him a little bit on our rankings, but ceiling wise, he's still among the highest of any outfielder in pro baseball, in my opinion.
No, the only reason he's dropped is that, and he talked about it himself when he talked to you, is that soft tissue injuries are the bane of his existence.
Yep. And they're hard to recover from. And he's had a plethora of them. So, yeah.
Right. It is only a durability issue. The only question, really, I would say that we don't really have much of a question about his power, even though it hasn't shown up in games that much yet. I feel like that's going to come.
Yeah.
The real question is just, he hasn't yet had a season where, and again, this year, his big injury has been, I would say, more of the fluke variety, which is run into a wall they can't catch.
Well, and that's the thing, is like, what is he supposed to do? Not make the catch? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a really unfortunate part of baseball where sometimes if you make a really good play, there's going to be a big, hard structure that you're going to run into making it. That's the way ballparks are designed. So if you're trying to play to win, you know, I'd rather he do that. I don't want him to get hurt, but what I'm saying, I'd rather you try to make the play than let up and, you know, be afraid.
I was just going to make a note though. In the past though, it's been leg injuries. It's been ankle. It's been the kind that's like, not you ran into a wall. It's been you pull something and then it takes you a while to recover from it. And is it more of those than the average player?
Definitely. Yeah. So I would say Walker and Jenkins was really impressive. We should mention Blake Mitchell. He did lead the American League team in home runs. I think he only got one at bat in the game. He got one at bat and he walked. Again, what we were talking about, like, these guys, you know, some of them, if it's an uncompetitive walk, you're basically getting, you know, one at bat or one plate appearance. But he led the American League in home runs. It's real power. Seth Hernandez, was very mean to him. Like, that sequence was tough. And I think that's the thing with Mitchell, is, you know, what's the contact going to be? The power is probably 70 raw, but how is it going to actualize? There's questions about that because of the swing and miss. A couple other names just wanted to shout out. Theo Gillen, he's tooled up. Like, we saw it in batting practice. He hit an upper deck home run. He's very strong, very physical, but he's also easy plus runner. Like, he had one of the fastest run times in the game. He's really impressive. I feel very good about where we have him ranked after seeing him in person this week. I don't know how you feel about that. He was another one. And
same way with Josiah Hartstrom, by the way. Hartstrom, we have really kind of stuffed him up our top 100. I came away from this like, yep, that's exactly what we thought. Again, I know, like, thankfully nowadays, I don't want to make this sound like that we've just kind of been stumbling around in the dark and then we see him in person. It's like, yeah, but everything that every evaluation we had on, excuse me, on Hartstrom is that he has real power with some hitting ability. He's a corner outfielder.
Yeah.
Physicality was very apparent, all that. I did want to bring up also a couple, because there weren't as many defensive standouts in this game, because there really just weren't that many. You don't get the opportunities. It's a 7-inning game. There aren't a ton of opportunities. The one I would say, the one player I'd say defensively got a chance to shine was Brewers' third baseman, Luis Peña, who's not normally a third baseman.
Played two games
here this year. Feeling like, looks like a third baseman.
Yeah, I would completely agree. It was obviously in deference to his teammate, his organizational teammate, I should say, Jesus Mate. He was playing third base. I guess this would be his third start there this year. And he looked like a natural. And, you know, when we see shortstops move to third base, you can tell their actions are just different, because they still have that shortstop influence in them. That's what we saw from Peña today. And I mean this in a complimentary way. He was very comfortable. He made a great over-the-shoulder catch ranging behind third base. One, that it was a very difficult play. I don't, the left fielder.
It could have been very easily a single. It's like in that Bermuda Triangle of that perfect spot where the left fielder, the shortstop, and the third baseman all are going to have trouble getting to it.
Yeah. Showed great range there. But I think the play that really impressed me the most was he made a play on a slow chopper where he did the shortstop thing where he positioned his body so that when he fielded it, his front leg was out in front and he could just easily transition without having to take that extra step to get the runner. Cause I believe it was a fast runner running down the line. And it was just a little thing, but the way he could contort his body and just how fluid he looked making the play really stood out. And as you said, it gave me a lot of confidence that, hey, if this guy has to move to third base, cause I thought his arm was fine there too. Like he threw a strong, accurate throw there, that he's someone that, I mean, the Brewers are an enviable amount of infield depth. I don't know where they're going to play all these guys, because Cooper Pratt is up in the majors right now. They've got
and Cooper Pratt, by the way, defensively is better than Jesus Bidet in my mind,
and probably Pena too at shortstop.
Oh, I would say without a doubt Pena. Yeah. I would say like that's even like if you were hearing them defensively at shortstop. To me, it is Pratt, Bidet, Pena.
Yeah,
and we're just talking and raving about Pena.
Yeah,
and he's the third of that group.
Yeah. At a position he's barely played this season. I'm not sure even how many ground balls he's taken there before games. So I thought that was really impressive. Throws wise, I thought Xavier Nyan's best infield arm, he threw an absolute seed across.
he did. I will also say, I felt like it was a little Mason Wynn to it, where it was like, he had time.
Yeah.
And he's like, he had time really to be like, boop. Instead, he's like, I'm only going to get one ball here and I'm on a StatCast data. And it was 92.7,
I believe.
Yeah.
And then the from the outfield, Mike Sirota made a really strong throw, which I thought the catcher actually
had. The catcher should have caught it.
Yeah. It was the hardest throw of the game. I think it was 94.7. Yeah. And so
I'll say, like, it's not a great throw from the outfield. Like, you can absolutely see 100 mile an hour from a guy who has time to get behind it and throw, but still wasn't bad.
Yeah, and it was an accurate throw, too, which you care about, obviously. So
it was one bounce, and the catcher tried to – and he missed it, and then they called an error on Sirota, which I'm sorry, but, like, it was – I know it had hit the ground, but that was intentional. He didn't short hop him. He didn't catch him – he did not catch the catcher in between. If you are making a throw from the outfield, if the hop is far, far away and true, which it was, that's still on the catcher to catch that.
Yeah, the catcher, he was trying to do the swipe tag, but he swiped before the ball was there. So that was the issue there. But I thought it was an interesting one because all the plays, there were some like more difficult plays, like Jesus Mate made a nice play ranging up the middle, had a strong arm. But I thought for the most part, like it was a pretty clean game other than that. Like the defense, like guys were playing out of position. You wouldn't know, like Eli Willits was playing second base. He looked fine there, you know, which I thought it was interesting to see these guys playing different positions in that regard, especially in the infield. Cause there's obviously the majority of the guys are going to be shortstops.
Franklin Arias, second base.
Yeah, exactly. So seeing those guys kind of like out of position, but still showing, you know, hey, I'm a great athlete. I am a good mover. I know what I can do here. Was very interesting, but there weren't, it was weird. You know, guys weren't really given opportunities to make that many great plays. I felt like,
well, it's again, if you think about it, there were 42 outs in that game.
Yeah.
And altogether, we were really talking about there were like 60 plate appearances, you know, a little less than that. And there's just not going to be that many again. The only thing that is disappointing about the Futures game every year is I feel like it starts and then I look up and it's over. And I know that it's going to be a year before we get another one of them.
Yeah. And I think we're at a point where it should go back to 9 innings. Like I felt it was rough at the end of the game in the 9th inning. The American League had 3 pitchers after the 7th inning, and they had multiple guys through 2 pitches. Like, and it's just an unfortunate situation with the way the rosters are constructed.
If you were an Orioles fan, you're like, okay, I can't wait. I'm going to see Joseph Zirwa. And Zirwa, basically, I think it was 2 pitches.
Yeah, yeah. I talked to him after the game about it, and he was like, yeah, what can you do? Like, it's like not ideal, but you know, it's fun to go out there and compete.
I like very, as we knew, very tall.
Yes, legit 6'8". But I would love to see it go back to 9 innings. I think that would be a solution.
I would say with that, like one of the things that they've done well now is they've now mandated that you have to bring relievers, actual relievers. Mason McGuire was there, Ben Grable's there. We had guys there who, if you had an inning that got away from someone, it would be okay, right? And I would say that your solution to that really kind of is look, if you go 9 and something happens in the eighth or ninth, if you have to bang an inning, it's an exhibition.
Or I think the other solution is just have the host team provide a couple arms for each team from one of their affiliates that's the closest. And, you know, I'm sure those guys would love the opportunity to mm-hmm. be at the game like that. And you don't even have to put them on the rosters. Like, you see it during the spring breakout games. Teams will backfill a couple of spots on those rosters with guys who are just there in case, hey, you know, we have this scripted inning set up, but if this guy's unable to finish, you're going to go in and get one out or two outs so the next guy can start with a clean inning. I don't think anyone is going to complain about that. You know, talking to all the players, they love the experience. They thought it was awesome. If you add a couple more players like that, who they don't even have to be the top prospects, like, just take whoever the Phillies
jersey. You said we're going to take four relievers instead of two.
Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, you come knowing, hey, you're going to get to experience it.
You might not
we
even can't play.
Promise you yeah. we're going to get you in the game.
Yeah.
Everyone else, we promise, but you are here as almost like the taxi squad guy.
Yeah.
But if needed, you're a guy who can get up and get ready and come in because that's your role. You know, and we're going to reward it to, like, I mean, even you said, we're going to reward it to two kind of veteran lifer relievers every year. Great.
Yeah.
Honor those guys too. You know, because they're grinders.
Yeah. I just think it would just make it the product. Like, I think the Futures game is great. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. But I think there are just some small tweaks that could make it even better and put more of a showcase on it. Because I genuinely think that MLB, this is something you want to be highlighting. These guys, the talent that was on the field, you do not get to ever see that at once, except for the MLB All-Star game. And that needs to be highlighted. Like, the common baseball fan should know who Seth Hernandez is now. And if I feel like if that was a primetime game on one of their network partners, they could accomplish that and they could start marketing minor leagues way more.
I would ask, I feel like right now, because everything that's going on, and again, we were in the weeds, we were there, but I feel like that what Seth Hernandez did in the spring breakout game, which was much less talent on the field than today, yesterday, I should say. But what he did there is probably resonated more than what he did yesterday, because when he did it in spring breakout game, it was kind of like, well, what else is going on right now? Whereas when he did it yesterday, it was like, did you see what Seth Hernandez did? No, I was watching Paul Skeens pitch at the same time. You know, as a Pirates fan, right? Like, you had your ace on the mound in a game for your big league club at the exact same time that Seth Hernandez was pitching. And then you could also say, oh, but also, and I was listening to I was in the 10th round of the draft at that point, seeing who my team was picking. And, you know, you then had a full slate of games, of day games as well, because it was all day games because everyone was not going to play at night. Yeah, it's a lot too much of a good thing. Again, these are first world problems. I would much rather have a futures game of seven innings and wish it was more and wish it was later than not have it, which did used to be the case. But at the same time, we are rooting for it to be better because we love it and we want more people to love it. So that is the Baseball America Prospect podcast for this week. Again, we're doing it a little early. And again, I apologize if the audio was a little bit off. We're making it do this week because we're all over the place. We're covering this stuff and it's very valuable for us. Again, Ian and I and Jacob Rudner all got to see literally, I think, almost half of our top, you know, well over a third of our top 100 in one day.
Yeah. Got to talk about it. Got to talk.
Yeah, I think Ian's number of top 100 prospects he's seen in person almost doubled. You went from like the mid, like 38, I think, and you said you're probably now in your 60s or, you know, maybe 70. Mm-hmm. So it's awesome from that standpoint. You know, we love it. But we thank you also for the download. We thank you. If you're on YouTube, please click that subscribe button. It does help us because it means more people will find the content. We love putting this out for you. We want more people to see it. For Ian, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.